This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hey there, welcome to the High School Hamster Wheel Podcast. I'm thrilled to bring you my conversation with Dr. Emily Edlin, a licensed clinical psychologist specializing in pediatric health psychology and who works in private practice with children, teens, and adults. Dr. Edlin is also the author of her first book titled Autonomy Supportive Parenting, Reduce Parental Burnout and Raise Competent, Confident Children. I picked up a copy of Emily's book and just couldn't put it down. I knew that I had to invite her to be a guest on the show. During our conversation, we talk all about autonomy supportive parenting, what it means, why parents should choose to do it, and the research that demonstrates the positive impact it has on our kids. As a parent of two young adults, I know how hard it is to relinquish control, what they do, who they hang out with, and the decisions they make. We are parenting from a place of concern and safety, but in the end, controlling our kids does not support their autonomy. My conversation with Emily provides so much insight and actionable advice to help our kids live the life they want to live. So without further ado, let's get started. Hi, Emily. Thanks so much for being here today on the High School Hamster Wheel Podcast.
Hi, Betsy. I'm so happy to be here with you.
Thank you. Your book, and we're going to talk a lot about your book, really, really resonated with me. And I know it's going to resonate with my listeners, so I can't wait to talk about it. But before we get started, can you just take a minute or two and introduce yourself to my listeners?
Sure. So I am Emily Edlin, a clinical psychologist, a mother of three, and now an author as of September 2023. I also do a lot of parenting writing in general. So I guess I've maybe finally earned the title parenting expert, if there is one.
Yeah. I mean, I think everybody has a little bit of knowledge, but you seem to have a lot of knowledge about particularly a really interesting topic surrounding parenting, autonomy supportive parenting.
Yes.
So before we get started, let's talk a little bit about you. So I always like to ask my guests, you know, how did they get their start and what were their high school years like? And, you know, were you a nerd? Did you like read a lot? Did you know what you wanted to do? What was high school Emily like?
I love this. I've never had this question. And it's so fun. So high school Emily was 100% a nerd. I mean, I was the hugest reader from a really young age. I really grew up as an only child, and so I entertained myself a lot, and I used reading and writing, and my imagination was kind of my way of occupying myself. And I actually was 10 years old when I knew I wanted to be a child psychologist. Up until then, I wanted to be either a dancer or a professional softball player. And then something shifted, and I just remember being really focused on, I loved, even as a child myself, I loved helping younger kids. And as I was a teenager, I always gravitated towards kids who seemed to need help and struggle when I was, you know, a camp counselor or in these different positions as a teenager around younger kids. I just gravitated towards the needy ones. And I loved school. So I just knew I want the highest degree possible so that I can go to as many years as possible.
Wow. You're like a dream child. My current high school student is so done, although he can't wait to go to college, but he's so done with high school.
Yeah.
As most are.
Well, and I would say I'm always curious how I would be in today's high school, you know, culture.
True, true.
But back in the 90s, I was super driven, very high achieving, really laser focused. And I will say, looking back, I don't really want that for my kids because I was also a stress case. You know, I had headaches and stomach problems and trouble sleeping. And now I can see how that hard drive not being balanced or moderated wasn't so great for me. I reached my goals, you know, but I learned a lot about myself in the process about how to be healthy and more balanced.
Was that self-inflicted, all that pressure on you, or did you feel it from your parents, from society, from your teachers?
You know, I've thought a lot about this, and I used to just say, oh, no, this was completely internal. But, you know, as I've been more reflective about it, I think because I performed really high as a young child, so I was reading fluently at age 3. When I was 5 and in kindergarten, I was reading, like, fifth grade material, and I was treated as the smart kid, you know? And so I do think there was something that I wanted to keep living up to these expectations that I was a high performer and stood out from the crowd.
Hmm. So then you made your way through high school, obviously, probably fairly easily, right? And then did you know, did you say, I'm going to school for psychology? Like, that was the thing.
Well, it's so funny. I was so a little bit arrogant, maybe, looking back, or I don't know. I decided to be an English major because I loved, you know, reading and writing, and I wanted to immerse myself. And my reasoning was, I'm going to a liberal arts college. This is my chance before I am in graduate school for psychology, completely assuming I would just go to graduate school for psychology without being a psychology major. Which did happen, but I was kind of fortunate it happened that way. I think I took a lot for granted that I'll just figure it out. It'll all happen how it should. A little bit of naivete there.
Yeah, I think a lot of us, and pretty much everyone does that, right?
Yeah.
They're like, oh, I'll just work it out, or I'll worry about it later,
yeah,
I think.
Exactly.
Okay, so you finished undergrad and you got into...
I did not get into grad school the first year I applied because I didn't have the research experience in psychology labs. And so I actually ended up being 3 years between my bachelor's and starting graduate school, where I got some hands-on experience working with kids. And then at the same time, I volunteered in research labs at universities to you know, give me more experience to be ready for graduate school. And so I did have a 3-year gap of working really, really hard, earning money to pay my bills while getting experience without being paid and applying to graduate school.
Wow. And did you know at that point that you, one, wanted to work with kids and wanted to work in a clinical setting?
So, yeah, I look back and I was also like, I have to trick them that I like research, because in a PhD program, you're supposed to do both. And the funny thing was, and I did apparently trick them enough, but I realized once I was in graduate school, I loved the research piece. And I do have a very scientific mind in many ways, where I'm skeptical of what I hear on the surface, and I want to dig deeper and ask more questions. And so I think the scientific model ended up being a really good fit for me. And that training that I got, which was very balanced clinical and research, ended up being a great preparation for my career. But I did always know I really primarily wanted to work with children and not be in a purely academic setting.
Okay. Well, this is a good segue into the book because, one, it's for parents.
Yes.
And really for kids of all ages.
Yep.
My focus, obviously, is more like teen and young adult, but all of what's in the book applies to kids of all ages. And I imagine you had to do an incredible amount of research for this book, speaking of research. So for those who aren't familiar with the title, it's Autonomy Supportive Parenting, Reduce Parental Burnout, and Raise Competent, Confident Children. I will say I could have used this book 10 years ago.
I hear that a lot.
I'm certainly glad I found it now, because it's not too late. So let's start from the beginning. What exactly is autonomy supportive parenting?
It is a sciencey mouthful, and I was hoping I could come up with some really catchy, sexy phrase, but I did not. So that's what it is. Essentially, it is based in about 30 years of research, and the ultimate aspiration in autonomy supportive parenting is raising a child who has a strong sense of self and a sense of agency in their world.
Okay. And I love that word agency. I actually had a guest early on in the podcast, and we talked a lot about this. But for those who aren't really, you know, familiar with the definition of agency, what exactly does that mean?
I see agency as the confidence in your own skills to live the life you want to live. So you can create the conditions that are important to you and align with your values, and you have agency, you have influence, you can make choices that serve you. So there's a certain amount of confidence and competence, coming back to my title, that has to be part of building that agency.
And for parents who, I'm going to try and put this as nicely as possible, who like to have control or be in control, this is a really tough thing for them to apply, right? So why is it important? I mean, I know why it's important, but are there multiple reasons why it's important to parent your children in this way?
Well, for one, the research is incredibly consistent across the decades and all different kinds of research designs and ages, that children coming out of autonomy supportive environments are doing better across the board. That's socially, psychologically, academically, cognitively. And that's why I was so passionate about writing this book, is because I don't think that message is out there right now. And in fact, you bring up control. That is as much part of my book as autonomy supportive, because they have to go so hand in hand. When we are controlling our children, as is the dominant parenting culture these days, we are not supporting their autonomy. So we can't be autonomy supportive when we're being controlling. And that's a really important awareness to have. And I just want to normalize that to be controlling is human. However, I think increasing our own awareness about when it's helpful and when it's not is a really important step in parenting, probably how we actually want to be parenting and raising the kids we want to raise.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, full transparency. And I think I've admitted this more than once on the podcast, particularly when my kids were younger, I was a bit of a helicopter. I mean, I was. I wanted to know where they were and what they were doing. And I know now, as I look back and kind of know myself better, it was primarily fear-based, because I was just so afraid of something happening to them. And I don't even mean like they're not going to get straight A's. I mean, I know some parents feel that way. I was never that parent. Like, oh my gosh, if they don't do well in school, they're not going to get into college, they're not going to get a good job. That was never me. Mine was more like the day-to-day, you know, they're going to get hit by
safety.
A car or, yeah, safety, thanks. So that's a big deal, right? Like fear-based parenting. Yeah. And then there's strength-based parenting too. What's the difference and the similarities between those two things?
Well, I think fear-based parenting is where most of us are operating much of the time. And a lot of that, I will take the blame off the individual and put it on our culture. You know, there's just so much provocative media that's all about instilling fear. And that's what gets clicked and attention and ad money. And so we're kind of prey to this messaging that we should be in a state of fear for our children's safety and therefore need to take action to be controlling around their environments. And I always recommend Lenore Scanese's book, Free Range Kids, where she gets into like, where is the actual threat versus the perceived threat with things like kidnapping fears or the Halloween candy hoax, you know, that there's razors in chocolate. So if you think back, I mean, we just get constant messages that we have to protect our children. But what ends up happening is when we're operating from a place of fear and see the world as such a threatening place, for one thing, our children absorb that message and they're more likely to become anxious themselves and not feel safe. And we are more reactive in our parenting and trying to protect rather than nurture skill development. So what can end up happening is they're actually then not developing important skills for more independent living, trusting in themselves to make the walk from home to school, for example. There's like the stats on how many kids walk to school is like the lowest it's ever been. So there's,
interesting. Yeah, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So I think there's a lot of ways we don't even realize this is happening. And fear makes us more controlling. When we flip it to strength-based, I think it's asking different questions. It's where is the opportunity here for learning rather than where is the threat that could happen that I need to save my child from. So if we can flip our thinking to where is an opportunity while checking in, is there actual threat, you know? Because the more we're communicating actual safety concerns, the safer our children are. But if everything feels unsafe and scary, it's actually less safe because they're going to overperceive threat in their environment, and which is very paralyzing.
Yeah. Boy, this is so, again, I could have used this a long time ago, but, and the older they get, the harder it is because you lose a little bit of control, for lack of a better word, every year.
Yes.
So once my kids became teenagers, it was that whole
transition
phase, right? And then when they started driving.
Oh, I'm terrified. My oldest is 14, so to still go through that.
Well, we'll talk because I went through it twice with boys, which, you know. But now that they're adults, you know, one's 18 and one's almost 20, you really have to let go. I mean, they're adults legally, you know. But I think we all know what you're saying,
right?
Our heads know.
Yes,
we need to let go. We need to give them the independence and the autonomy. But we really struggle to do that. And we'll be right back after a quick break.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I love that in the book you share, I think it's 10 tools, right? Yeah, 10 tools to be more autonomy supportive. So can we just talk about a couple of those here? People will have to buy the book, and I want them to buy the book to get them all, but let's talk just about a few.
Sure, and I'll just say in the book, I use vignettes throughout the book with actual dilemmas that are very common in families, and then I outlined specifically how the different tools can come into play. So there's a lot of illustration of the tools over and over. But I think, especially because we're talking about the fear-based versus strength-based, a couple of the tools that I think are really key are expecting independent behaviors and expressing trust in our children.
So can you give me a couple examples of, for particularly for teenagers, right, expecting independent behavior?
Well, let's talk about school, you know? They should be navigating their school life as independently as possible and directing communication with teachers themselves and tracking what they need to do themselves. I completely get there's a huge continuum of, I'm sure you talk about executive functioning on this podcast quite a bit.
For sure. Yeah.
And so, especially in younger teens, there's going to be a lot more range of how much organization they can muster. And so some kids do need more of that external support, but I think it's really keying into your child's skill level and giving them the support they need, but then backing off when you can see that they are capable on their own.
Right. Right. I'll give you a good example. So setting your alarm.
Right.
And getting up when your alarm goes off. Yes. That has been a struggle in our home. Mostly because, you know, the kid sleeps like a log.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, we could have a tornado outside the house and he wouldn't hear it. But yeah, because when they get out of the house, whether
they
go to college
or wherever they end up,
or work after, or whatever it is, I'm not going to be there to knock on the door and be like, get up.
Exactly.
Okay. So how do you propose that parents... Because we want to jump in,
yes.
right? So they forgot their lunch,
yep.
or they left their book report.
Yep.
Do they even do that anymore? on the desk or whatever. How do we really like duct tape ourselves in the house and not rescue them?
So I think, you know, I talk a lot in the book about flexibility. The F word of parenting is actually flexibility. And each kid is a little different. And I think we're always wanting to think what is important for this child to learn. Like, where is the teaching for this child that's so important? So if you have a kid that always brings their lunch and one day they forget, I don't think it's necessary to, well, I'm not rescuing you. You're going to have to suffer. Except if you literally cannot take them their lunch and then they have to figure it out, right? But I think if there's a kid where you're working with them on being more organized on top of things and you have they're in training with it, it is a good natural consequence for them to just not get their lunch brought to them. So I think that's, again, there's not one answer ever. But
yeah, I'm speaking on behalf of parents, but I should say myself, I lean more toward bailing them out of things that are going to have like significant consequences or consequences that are going to affect them later in life, right? So let's say, for example, they forgot their report that they had to bring to school. Everything's online now, but, you know, or they left their history book at home and they're going to get a zero and that's going to affect their grade and that's going to affect their GPA. For me, those kinds of things are like, well, you know, this is big. Whereas if he skips lunch today, it's not the end of the world. So I think I know all this, right? I'm sitting here. I know exactly what you're saying. And my brain says, do that.
Yeah.
But it's hard. We want to help them. We want to swoop in.
I know.
Right.
So the other thing I'll bring in here then is a couple of the other skills or tools that are autonomy supportive, which is collaborating with your child around problem solving. So if there's a pattern of lagging skill somewhere, to talk with them around solutions to address that. And so it's not coming in and say, okay, this is what you need to do to make sure you remember your report, you know, or you remember to bring everything you need to school. It's saying, I'm noticing this is a pattern. This is getting in the way of your performance and affecting your grades. And I know going to college is important to you if that's the case. And so what do you need from me? How can we work together to help you set up a better system? You know, so it's making it collaborative rather than I'm going to tell you how to do it and what to do.
Okay. Yeah. And I like involving them, making them part of the solution and handing it to them and saying, what are you going to do?
Right.
To improve this versus here's how I'm going to help you.
Right. And is it important to them?
Right. I don't know. That's a good question. I'll say the getting up in the morning is not important to them. They'd rather sleep through it than go to school.
Yeah.
But
what happens if they don't go to school?
You have no choice.
Right.
Right.
Do they care if they get a bunch of absences?
Yeah. Some, I guess, maybe. But yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. So the other part of the book that is a huge part of autonomy and supportive parenting is the framework of values. And so keeping values as part of these discussions, we are transmitting our values to our kids through our parenting, and we need to recognize they're developing their own set of personal values at the same time. And so it's really important, especially in adolescence, where all of this is really gelling, to check in with them about what's important and why.
Okay. And I'm just going to go back to control for a minute, because we talked about that earlier. And we talked about like why we shouldn't be controlling and why they need to be independent. But are there levels of control that are healthy or helpful?
Yeah. And so I have a whole chapter all about control in the book. And it is complicated when you look at the research. So I'll break it down as quickly as possible. There is psychological control, which is the use of shame and guilt and conditional love. And that is clearly negative, because it's this way of trying to control a child's psychological experience. And so that's very damaging. Behavioral control can be healthy and can be unhealthy. And I like to differentiate them by saying the unhealthy form of behavioral control is pressure. So using consequences in a punitive way, using rewards in a coercive way, where you're really trying to pressure your child to behave a certain way. Whereas the healthy version, which is more support, is providing them structure through helping them develop behaviors that are going to serve them better. So that can include things like consequences and rewards, but used in a different way than a pressure way. And so, again, I get into much more detail in the book. It can be a little confusing, but it has helped me as a mother myself to make those distinctions when I'm trying to, quote unquote, get my child to do something. You know, are they feeling pressured? And is that why this is not feeling like it's going very well? And how can I shift to being more supportive? And if you want, I can just give a quick example of how, like, using rewards can be pressure versus support, because I think parents
get that'd be
really hung up on this. So, okay, and I'll use an example from my teenager, who one of her struggles is she gets really nervous about anything new. And so it's something that we work on. And she had signed up for a new tennis class and then found out that her friend wasn't going to be able to go to that first class. And so she started to get really amped up. And I'm not going to go. And I just knew for her life skills, she needs to be able to know she can do this. And so I talked to her about what would feel like something to celebrate that you went and did something hard to do, you know, like a special Starbucks trip or something. So it's not if you go to this tennis class, I'll get you Starbucks. It's let's celebrate that this was really hard for you and you did it. And let's pick what that, like what you can look forward to.
That's a great example. And I love that approach because, yeah, it gives them a reason, or it gives them something to look forward to, to push themselves. And a lot of it, you talk about this in the book, a lot of it comes down to internal motivation, right? You talk about the golden ticket, internal motivation. And that is, I hear from so many parents, and I see it in the career coaching I do, particularly with young adults. Motivation is a huge challenge.
So this is, I'm so glad you bring this up. Not everyone hits on this, and it's so crucial to autonomy supportive parenting. It is actually the mechanism by which it, quote unquote, works, is these autonomy supportive strategies boost internal motivation. And so this is, according to the research and just decades of theory on motivation and behavior. So basically, when we feel like we have choices, when we feel confident in our skills, and when we feel agency, we're more motivated, even for things that maybe are undesirable, right? Like doing chores or doing homework or going to work. It's that finding that internal motivation. And that's what this parenting approach really is increasing. So when we feel controlled by someone and told what to do and how to do it, we don't feel that internal motivation. Mm-hmm. And it could be the same exact thing being asked or that we are doing, but if we feel like it's because of our interest and benefit that we're driving it, we're going to feel more motivated to do it.
Well, and so if we pull back as parents and we feel like our kids are still not showing motivation, is there anything we can do to encourage that?
Well, I think this is where we come back to another big piece of scaffolding, and that's the idea of knowing where your child's skills are at. And sometimes if there is a discrepancy between, you know, you're backing off, they have agency, and yet they still seem incredibly unmotivated, there may be a skill deficit that you aren't aware of. And so that's mm-hmm. where another piece comes in, which is this whole level of empathy and perspective taking to really tune into what is going on with your child emotionally and under the surface. And that is often what needs to be dug into when there is a lack of internal motivation.
And that's potentially, you know, working with a therapist mm-hmm. or a professional who can mm-hmm. help. Because again, I hear that from a lot of parents, mm-hmm. like, I just can't get my kid to be motivated about anything, yeah. about school, about activities, about, you know, coming out of their room, getting off their video yeah. games, all those things.
Yeah. So, no, that's complicated. And I do think getting a professional involved can be incredibly helpful in those situations.
Okay. Can we talk a little bit more about school?
Yes, let's do it.
So, and this is kind of where the rubber meets the road for me and why I started this podcast in the first place. Yep. Because I feel like school is all about getting the grades. Yep. Doesn't matter what you learn or if you learn, right? Just get the good grades, get the scores, get to the best college, whatever that is, right? But what about what they're not getting in high school? Like learning how to, the socialization mm-hmm. factor, the grit,
yep.
the everything they need to succeed in the world. Thoughts on that? I know you wrote about it in the
yeah.
book.
So. Well, I think this ties again to motivation. And we know from motivation research that external motivators are less effective and grades are external motivators. Yeah. And when we're thinking about school, what is internal motivation? It's the love of learning.
Right.
It's the process oriented rather than the outcome. And that is like swimming uphill mm-hmm. in snow against the current in this culture. And that's where it's very unfortunate kind of how schools are structured and set up these days.
I say this all the time. And let me just always say, it's not about the teachers.
Right.
It's the system is
yes.
broken. And I feel like the system is sucking the love of learning out of these
yeah.
kids.
My oldest loved reading when she was younger. I mean, mm-hmm. she would tear through books. And of course, as a reader myself, I'm like, oh, of course she's doing that. Like, she's just like her mom. But then she hit fifth, sixth grade, mm-hmm. and just wouldn't pick up a book to save her life.
Yep.
And I brought it up with her language and literature teacher in sixth grade, and she said, school beats it out of them. Mm-hmm. And it was just so sad.
Yeah.
So,
because they don't read for enjoyment anymore.
Yeah. And so that's actually a good example, because for me as a parent, I grieved this for her. I felt like reading is everything, because it mm-hmm. was for me. But it is in many ways so foundational to the rest of learning and performing yeah. well in school and everything. And so it's been a process for me to like meet her where she's at with it and then figure out ways to sort of boost some internal motivation. And she has this year in eighth grade flown through a few books that she got really into. And I'm seeing some sparks.
Oh, yay.
But it came from her. I just kept creating some conditions around it, you know, where we would talk about the importance of reading, but not in a pressurized way, not in a you need to read a book a month or have any sort of expectation. It was more, this is what's so fun about it. You know, this is what can be so great about it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I love that. Well, and the other part of school that I'm not school bashing, but I'm just going to say it. Failing is bad.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Don't fail your class, right. Which is bad, but don't get anything wrong. Yeah. Get all the right answers. So, you talk about that in the book too, right? About how to let them fail first. Yeah. And that's, I think that's really, I know it's really tough for parents, right? We don't want to see our kids mess up. We don't want to see them go through any pain or struggle or suffering. So we want them to succeed. We want them to achieve. And, you know, if science fairs are any indication of, do parents get involved?
Yeah, right.
I think that's a good example, but and we all mean well.
I know.
Right? Like, we're not doing it to, like, buck the system or help our kids cheat or, you know what I mean? It's just about we want them to do well. But again, I wish I knew this 10 years ago. I wish I would have let my kids fail more.
Yeah. Because our jumping in does not serve their skill development.
Right.
And it delays it. So they're going to eventually need to learn these lessons and develop these skills. But then it's going to be without us around. And this is what I always say. Don't you want to be around when they're first going through those failures? Mm-hmm. I mean,
Somebody said that to me when my son had his first big disappointment. She's like, wouldn't you rather be here for the hangnail?
Yeah.
You know, so you can help him learn how to be resilient and work through this than when it becomes like a huge, whatever it is, loss or or struggle when he's an adult and doesn't know how to deal with it.
Right. Well, and since we're talking about school, something I really want to say here is that going back to kind of the aspiration of autonomy supportive parenting, of raising a child with a strong sense of self, is within the school environment, being really flexible about what part of their self is school. It's not their full identity. It doesn't define them or shouldn't define their worth. And so when you're looking at how a child's performing in school, I think it's taking a step back again and being more, and this is what your podcast is all about, what are the different paths, right? Let's not be so focused on one way of doing this. I feel like my job as a parent is to help my kids or support my kids in tuning into what works for them and what's a good fit for them. So I don't want them taking an honors class that exceeds their skill level and makes them feel really frustrated and down on themselves and shuts them down, right? I want them to find their sweet spot of challenge without being bored. I mean, to me, that's more process again, rather than how many honors classes or, you know, what is the GPA? Because I think in that process, they're more likely to enjoy learning and school and do better. So in the end, you're actually going to get better performance. And this is what the literature shows, actually, is kids with autonomy supportive parents actually do better in school and have more positive attitudes about school.
Hmm. Yeah. And you know, if we talk about higher ed now, the bar keeps getting raised and raised and raised. We just went through college acceptance season and I'm watching lots of friends and acquaintances post on social media, my kid got in, my kid didn't get in, my kid is devastated. You know, how about like, my kid is doing great. And even though they can't go to school ABC, they're going to be okay.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, there's a fit for everyone. And this is another episode entirely.
Yeah.
But I kind of saw it with my own kids too, particularly with my second son, because you learn after the first one. He was not having it. And he's like, I'm not going to take a bunch of AP classes just to take a bunch of AP classes. I'm like, hallelujah, yeah, right. Don't. Yeah, he took one because it was a subject that he was interested in. But the rest, he took electives that I don't know if colleges care about or not. I don't really care. Like, he enjoyed it. Yeah. And you know what else? He took a class in something he has been in love with for years and thought he wanted to study post-secondary. After he said, so glad I took that class. I do not want to go down this path. Yeah. And I keep saying, I wish there was more of that in school. I wish you could have one period all year long where each month they take a different class and they get a taste of it. Yeah. Because it's so much about, and this is where my career development stuff comes in, but it's not so much about figuring out what you do want. It's also about ruling out what you don't want.
Right.
And kids in high school are so busy trying to score on the AP exams and do well on the SATs. Nobody ever asks them, what do you like? What are you good at? What matters to you?
Right.
And that's, let's talk about meaning, because that's another really big topic in your book.
Yeah. And finding meaning is a huge part of adolescent development. I mean, the brain has become more functional for abstract thinking and deep thinking, and that's where all the existential stuff starts to come in. It's the key phase of identity development. And so the more freedom they feel to explore what matters to them and their values, the more likely they'll find it. But if they feel like they need to conform to what their parents expect of them, or what they assume, this is who I'm supposed to be to please my parents, they're missing out on that phase of really understanding who they are and their personal values.
And that is so incredibly important, knowing who they are, or at least understanding a big part of it. Again, I'm seeing that so much right now in the young adults, college students, and recent grads that I work with. They have very little sense of self, of what's important to them, what matters, what they want.
Yeah.
And it's really hindering them from figuring out what they're going to do when they graduate.
Absolutely. I see this in my therapy practice as well, with young adults feeling incredibly lost. I mean, just this feeling of like unmoored, like there's no anchoring anywhere, and they're just sort of floating aimlessly and don't understand what they want because they don't really know who they are. And this really is, and I know we're getting deep and philosophical, which I love, but this is this is what I love about talking about autonomy supportive parenting. It's not just a science and a set of strategies. It's really a way of being as a parent and a culture you're creating in your home and family that is nurturing these big ideas around a child who really is going to figure out who they are in the world. I mean, that's huge. I know adults, many adults, who have no idea who they are still. And you know what I hear from those adults? How controlling their parents were.
Wow, that's really interesting. I think about my parents and they were not controlling at all. In fact, I used to say, really?
A little more.
They're letting us do that. They're giving us that freedom. But you know what? You're absolutely right. Like, I think all three of us don't really struggle with who we are or what matters to us or what brings us, what has meaning. Like, I hadn't really thought about that till now. This is the kind of stuff that, seriously, I could talk to you for hours about. So in that vein, how do we as parents, and this is a tough and a big question, help our kids find meaning? I mean, okay, so less controlling, but is there anything, and that's a not do, right? Is there anything we can do to help that?
Well, and I talk specifically in the book about religion and volunteerism as pathways to developing a sense of purpose and meaning in life. And we all know psychologically we're better off when we have a sense of purpose, and that both of those pathways are helpful in developing that purpose in a stronger way earlier. So I think it's looking in your family life, are there what would align with your family values in terms of either focusing on religious activities or volunteer activities? I mean, how can you find opportunities for your child and you, like as a unit even, to connect with this idea of the greater good, of the world outside of your bubble? It's such an important aspect of identity development, is being in touch with a different way of living and being in the world than you're used to. And so finding those opportunities could become a priority for the family.
Great advice. This has all been so, so incredibly helpful to me as a parent, even though, again, my kids are grown, but also just knowing that, generally speaking, parents are struggling with this. I'm seeing it in their kids. Mm-hmm. So that's how I can tell that it's that parents might be having a hard time with it. And I'm hearing it from other parents. Right. But there's so much that we didn't cover that I'd love to talk to you about. But I want to make sure we give everything, all the topics, enough time. So I'm going to invite you to come back another time.
Oh, great.
Oh, my gosh. I would love it. Before we go, because I know people are going to want to learn more, and I'm going to put links to the book and everything we've talked about, but where can people find and follow you?
Thanks so much, Betsy. It's been such a fun conversation today.
Yeah.
So I have a website, emilyedlinphd.com, where you can find all my goings-ons. And I also have a Substack newsletter called The Art and Science of Mom. I try and get that out close to weekly, but not always.
That's pretty good.
But it's a lot of work. But I get into more of the modern parenting challenges and autonomy supportive parenting in real life, if you want more of that. And then I am at Dr. Emily Edlin on the socials, Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook. Oh, and I also co-host a podcast, Psychologists Off the Clock. And I do a lot of parenting episodes.
And you parent three kids.
I do. They are.
I'm not sure how you fit this all in.
I don't know either. And I do sleep, because sleep is very important to me. So,
wow. You should write a book about how you do all that and sleep.
And watch Netflix every night.
Oh, yeah. Same. Well, thanks again. This has been such a great conversation. I'm so, so glad our paths crossed and we got to do this.
Thank you.
It's conversations like this one with people like Emily that really energize me and fill me with hope for future generations. It's no secret that so many of our teens and young adults are struggling to find their way. As parents, it's natural and common for us to want to swoop in and save the day for our kids. If at all possible, we want to try to prevent or remove their pain and suffering. But the reality is that the more we try to control, the more potential damage we're doing. I think we're all in agreement that we want our kids to launch into the world with clarity, confidence, and a strong sense of self. Our brains know what we should do, but we don't always follow our brain. We often lead with our heart. I know I do. And even though my kids are young adults now, I'm still going to try to implement Emily's advice, offering more support and providing less pressure, focusing on strength-based parenting versus fear-based parenting. And most of all, helping my kids continue to develop their sense of purpose and meaning and a strong sense of self. Be sure to tune in to my next episode when Dr. Emily Edlin returns and we discuss parenting topics related to mental health and neurodiversity. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm so grateful that you took the time to listen. Please share this podcast with someone who will find it helpful. Be sure and check out the show notes at highschoolhamsterwheel.com, where I will include all the links mentioned during this episode. That's it for today. I'll be back soon with another episode of the High School Hamster Wheel Podcast.
Coming up on 5 Minute News, I'm Anthony Davis. You might think it's partisan because maybe it's critical of one side or the other, but it's not. It's just the truth. And I think that's also something that's kind of unusual for Americans listening to the radio or to podcasts, because the news landscape in the States has been so partisan for so many decades. So 5 Minute News is verified, truthful, independent, unbiased, and essential world news daily.